Earth as a singular planet. In fact, it is anything but. What it is a story not of a universe,
but a multiverse.
Where universes and planets, such as Earth, were replicated and mirrored across a vibrating, infinite plane. Some barely different from the next.
Others drastically so.
This is DC On Screen. Every week, Dave and Jason talk about the multiverse of DC properties on film and television. But be warned, if it's been officially released, you can expect they'll spoil it.
Welcome into DC On Screen, episode 494. I am your host, David C. Robertson. This is my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hello.
And we got kind of, well, I mean, it's kind of a big week, kind of a small week. I guess it's a medium week for news.
Medium week. A whelming week.
Before we jump into everything, if you do want to go hang out with us on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/DC On Screen podcast. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, 205-259-6331. We do have an iTunes review this week. It comes from Salvatore Chief, one of our buddies on Twitter, a listener, wonderful person. Mm-hmm. Says, one of the best DC podcasts out there. A must listen for me every time an episode drops. Solid DC news that doesn't fall for pointless clickbait. Dave and Jason give excellent commentaries with a positive vibe, but are not afraid to call WB out when it has missed a step. The greatest strength of this podcast would have to be the host. Dave and Jason are fantastic. They are truly the world's finest, also the funniest pod you'll ever find. I highly recommend this podcast. Hit subscribe. Seriously, hit subscribe. We all... That's a super nice thing to say, man.
That really is. That part about world's finest. So, damn, man. Thank you.
That's good stuff. Like, and
we can retire now.
And what he just did there really helps us out. So if you want to go give us a positive rating and review over on iTunes, it is much more than welcome. It really does help us out. Let's pop on over to the news here. We're going to start off in the movie section as we always do. And there seems to be a lot of hubbub about the Joker, the supposed Martin Scorsese produced Todd Phillips film that's going to be focusing on the Joker's origins. And I have no doubt that this thing is in development. But a bunch of different people have come out with a lot of different information. It's all rumored. Nothing has been officially announced. No matter what headlines you see, I've saw some headline earlier this week that said that Joaquin Phoenix is officially on board. No, he's not. He's in talks. Like, as far as we know,
yeah,
he is in talks. So according to the Omega Underground, the film is going to be set in the 80s, and it could start filming in September. And they're saying it's probably going to be shooting in New York City. That makes it a pretty good possibility, I think, that they'll say something, they'll announce at San Diego Comic-Con.
If September is the real goal, then yeah, there's no reason you keep that under your belt.
Mm-hmm. And they're also reporting that...
vice versa, if I don't hear it, then I'm pretty dubious about September.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're saying that they're expecting the story to be taken from The Killing Joke a little bit, just elements of it. And that... Yeah,
everyone says that.
There's going to...
I mean,
sure.
You have to.
But, you know, they're bringing up King of Comedy, the Scorsese... Robert De Niro movie, where, you know, comedian keeps failing and turns to a life of crime. Now that hashtag show, and remember, hashtag show, these are the people who were actually arguing with David Sandberg about what the character sheets were for his own friggin' film. So, you know, grain of salt, people. Yeah. Are reporting that the working title for the Joker movie is Romeo, and that they have some exclusive character details, more character descriptions, for what they are saying, definitively saying, calling the Joaquin Phoenix Joker film. So these are interesting. These are some interesting character breakdowns, and they might be right. There's a character named Penny here that's going to be a supporting female, 60 to 74, Caucasian, lower class, very attractive in her younger days, still feels that way about herself. But recently, her health has started failing, and she's nearly bedridden in her Lower East Side apartment, which she shares with her grown son, who just moved back home. She's obsessed with her former employer, and can't believe this is what her life has come to, that she has ended up like this. This looks like Joker's mother, maybe. And
and feels like former employer might be Ace Chemical.
Yeah, and they're saying that, you know, she will have struggled with mental illness and they'll be looking for a younger actress in her late 20s to play an earlier version of her. I was thinking, you're saying Ace Chemicals. I was just thinking something in show business. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can say it too.
They also have a character named Sophie Dumond, supporting female, 27 to 34, to play an African-American or Latina. Not beautiful, has a hardness to her, a single mother living on the Lower East Side, doing the best she can, trying to make ends meet. Worn out by the grind of the city, she understands how the system is stacked against her and the people in her community, how unjust it is for all of them. She's just trying to catch a break. They're saying that it could be a potential love interest for his Joker, for Phoenix's Joker, or a potential partner in crime. She also has a 4-year-old daughter, Gigi, who will have a small role in the film. There's a character named Murray Franklin, male, 65 to 75, Caucasian. While no further description was given about the character, they believe that they're going to be bringing in Robert De Niro, or trying to get Robert De Niro for the part. There's a character named Randall, supporting male, 40 to 59, Caucasian. Thinks he is the wisest and most knowledgeable person in any room he's in. Tries to present himself as a mentor to everyone, but he is really just looking out for himself. He's burly. There's Gary, a supporting male, 30 to 49, any ethnicity, to play a dwarf. Randall's best friend. He's good-natured and a buddy to his colleagues at work. One of the only decent people in the whole movie. There's Hoyt Vaughn, supporting male, 50 to 69, any ethnicity. The old-school manager of hotel staff. He's seen it all and finds it difficult to give a shit about much of anything. Detective Garrity, supporting male, 50 to 59, any ethnicity. Police detective in a city on the brink. A by-the-book cop, worn down by all of his years on the force. He doesn't care about or take into consideration any of the societal or political ramifications of his cases. And Detective Burke, a supporting male, 30 to 39, any ethnicity, a police detective and Garrity's partner. He's an asshole who gets off by being in a position of authority. Being a cop is how he defines himself. This is a very eclectic and interesting set of descriptions, because nothing really feels like anything from
confusing
canon at all. You think it's confusing? Yeah.
I mean, not by themselves, just when you try to paint the picture of all those characters in your mind, I don't know what that would lead to.
I mean, it feels like something Scorsese would do. That's what it feels like to me, like, you know, 80s New York crime scene / show business type stuff.
Yeah.
Like seedy underbelly
of show business. I don't disagree with that. I'm coming at it from so much of the DC mythos that I can't quite see it from that angle and make it make sense, if that makes any sense.
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
That's an odd setup he's got going on.
Again, and so all this might just be fluff in the wind. Who knows?
Could be.
But, you know, Mark Hughes has said, that's the guy over at Forbes, writes a lot of DC-based editorials. He's saying that the studio was bullish on this Joker film. Hughes said that no one has said as much explicitly, but that he believed the recently announced Jared Leto film would never happen, and that the current version of the villain would only be in the Suicide Squad sequel or the tie-in film, if at all. He says, Joaquin Phoenix is playing the Joker in a standalone film that will possibly wind up not being standalone as the situation evolves with the solo Batman movies and as the future of the DCU shakes up. He says he's heard whispers from several people, and if the movie is a success, the studio is considering folding it into the continuity of the Batman in order to avoid having to find another Joker for the rebooted Batman franchise. He says it appears as though the films were not necessarily developed that way, but that as Warner Brothers has started charting a course for their DC films going forward, the notion of tying their two Gotham-based prequels together seemed like an obvious leap to make. And Hughes stressed this as well. This is not a done deal, or even necessarily the prevailing philosophy at Warner Brothers, yet. Things are very much up in the air given the multiple changes to DC slate, the AT&T Time Warner merger, the looming releases of Aquaman and Shazam, two movies which will have significantly less baggage than BVS or Justice League. So, I mean, all of this up in the air, but it kind of is looking like they might just... You think they're just creating another universe? Just...
No. God, no. Yeah. Look, the... Forbes is questionable. I mean, highly questionable as a source in general. That hashtag show is actually has gotten some stuff right on their casting sheets for TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, surprisingly been pretty accurate about that. But for movie stuff, has been like as you said, like
yeah,
actively wrong on several occasions.
I think Hughes has a much better track record than those people. But it all seems to be seem to be kind of going along with the same track.
But it's all still whispers, and I get how like he's got a good narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like anything he's saying is explicitly it could be right. Mm-hmm. It could. But come on, man, we're not. I need some real news.
I mean, you know, it's like I said, it's all rumor. Even Hughes says it's all rumor. It's not a done deal. He's just hearing stuff.
Like, he not only says that he's just hearing stuff, he also says, and they could change their mind. Like, giving himself another out on it.
Well, hell, they...
Which doesn't make me feel extremely comfortable about the reporting.
They had a whole damn movie shot with Justice League and they changed their mind.
I know.
There's no way anyone can be, like, 100% accurate on any of this stuff at this point.
I mean... As it's actually happening, yes. Before it happens, no. So before it happens, it's neat speculation, but come on.
So over on Twitter, Girls Chat Comics tweeted over to Chris McKay, the director for the Nightwing movie, and said, rewatching BVS and all it's doing is making me want a Nightwing film and a decent Robin or two on screen. Maybe a Red Hood thrown in for good measure. Any Grayson news for us? Chris McKay says, no new news. I'm excited by everything Walter Hamada is doing at WB and DC, and as both a fan and a filmmaker, I can't wait to see what Matt Reeves is creating in Gotham City. If you love DC or movies, superheroes in general, this is a great time to be alive. Patience is a good thing. And that's interesting, the things that he doesn't say. Like there are no new news, though, or there is no new news, but he's... I don't know what to take from this. Like, do you think they're just like holding off on the Nightwing movie to see what... happens in the DCEU, or
not necessarily. The more and more I hear about it, Hamada and Emmerich have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a plan apparently.
Yeah,
and there have been, according to some reports, some debriefings and some talks, and I don't know. It is a little bit in flux as far as I think they are reshaping things to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But that like no new news on his front isn't. It's not problematic for me. If anything, I think a lot of these movies have been kind of put on a, you know,
yeah,
keep it on the DL kind of thing. I mean, come on, we all know it's suspicious that Aquaman hasn't released a trailer. I know Comic-Con is a great place to do it,
mm-hmm.
but it's been a minute. Like, one of our phrases at this point is give them a minute, and it's been one.
Yeah.
Normally, you would see one before that. I do think they kind of put things on ice for a minute.
Yeah.
Not necessarily for good or ill, but I do think they iced him.
See, the way that Chris McKay says this, there's no new news. He's excited about everything Hamada's doing, so he's trying to put us at ease, but he's also saying, like, I can't wait to see what Matt Reeves does. It just makes me wonder if they're saying, hey, let's just hold off on Nightwing and see if we can't tie this in, if it's more successful over on this other line.
I would take it a different way. First of all, the phrase no new news bothers me slightly.
Yeah.
A little redundant, but whatever. Also, if he's excited about what Matt Reeves is doing, maybe he's just
excited
involved
as a fan
in what Matt Reeves is doing. Like, maybe that's the angle. Doesn't necessarily have to be he's on the bench waiting to see how it goes. Mm-hmm. It could also be that this is a team effort.
Hmm.
And maybe that does mean that Matt Reeves kind of is the first one with the floor, and we got to see where that goes and what decisions get made.
Because
mm-hmm. that is kind of how it works. It's not like the two directors get together and collude against the studio or something. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess it could be done, but I don't know if I've ever heard of it.
Yeah.
It'd be more, hey, your movie's going to come after this. This is what we're thinking. Maybe let's get all in the same room for a second, and then we're going to see what he's doing, and then you can kind of start developing from there. Like yeah. That would make sense to me.
Yeah, it would make sense to me, too. I am interested to see where they go with this in general. Like, this is some weird stuff. Nothing feels too far. You know what I mean? Like, not nothing, but... So many suggestions that people are putting out there seem like, you know what, that could be a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to...
And I do think it's...
It's hard to keep track of what just sounds like a good idea and what might actually be true sometimes.
And I do think that, like, Aquaman and Shazam, man, if they don't do well, that's probably going to really decide it.
In what sense, though?
Well, if Aquaman and Shazam...
Who cares?
Well, critically, people do care, and people do... Mainstream people do react to negative reviews. And I think if this, like, I think if Aquaman, and, you know, I'm not a business insider or anything, but I think if Aquaman gets negative critical reviews, even if it gets, like, really positive audience reviews and makes a ton of money, it's going to hurt the DCEU brand in as much as they've never given it a DCEU title, but it's going to hurt that universe, and I feel like they're going to be more inclined to push towards something else, that being the DC Dark or whatever. Same way, if Shazam doesn't do well, I mean, who knows what they're going to do with Shazam if Aquaman doesn't do well. I don't know. Like, I guess shooting is done. I don't know if they'll need reshoots. I don't know. Again, I don't know what Hamada's doing. I don't know if he is quite as reactionary as a lot of other people have been at Warner Brothers.
They're, to me, those are two different movies. I don't think those are going to be dependent on each other.
I'm saying they're both dependent on the or the DCEU is dependent on their success.
As a pair, I can kind of get behind what you're saying. But maybe like Shazam getting reshoots because of Aquaman, I feel like they went for different things.
Mm-hmm.
That really feels very apples and oranges to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think if Aquaman's... It seems like Aquaman is kind of going to be like... I know we've been told it's going to have some fun with itself and not just be a, you know, a 2 hours worth of a slugfest and heavy commentary. And mm-hmm. Like, I get that we're not doing like Gladiator or something, but we're... Like, Shazam feels wildly different, especially when all the stuff we've been talking about with, you know...
I'm aware of that. Like
their social media killing it. I just can't see one affecting the other in that way. But both of them together, if they both kind of did badly... And by did badly, I mean I know in theaters that Justice League didn't hit the marks it was supposed to. And mm-hmm. it was down from where it should have been. I get the trending part. And yes, if we hit Aquaman and it trends even lower, and then we hit Shazam and it trends even lower to the point where we're not even sure that that weekend you're going to win, oh yeah, you gotta do something. You just gotta.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at any point, if one of these movies doesn't win the weekend it's in, I'll tap out as far as saying that this isn't a broken system. But for now, it's made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience reviews are way higher than the critic reviews. And honestly, like when you look at, say, the difference between TV and movies... TV's measured by critic reviews. It's measured by Nielsen ratings for the most part. And it's starting to find ways to measure itself by streaming services, which are still the same thing. It's very connected to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think secretly the movie people are into that way more than it would seem.
They are, I think, but I've had so many interactions with people who don't keep up with like we do. And they didn't go see Justice League because they heard it sucked. Like the critics said it sucked, so they didn't go. You know, like that, it matters. It does. I hate to say it does, but it does.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know there's a percentage.
And these are people who came to me afterward and said, oh man, I checked it out in your recommendation. I don't understand what the problem was. I don't either.
Like, that's one of the things, though, is like critic reviews can seriously hurt your box office.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, God, Justice League positioned itself so poorly in box office, right? It just could have done itself some favors, but like in the weekend where it aired. But anyway, it can actually affect that. Sure, like, because it costs so much at this point to actually go sit down and watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a casual viewer, you can wait. You're looking at, if you have a family of four, honestly, it might cost you upwards of $75 to watch a movie. And that's a very conservative estimate for, you know, getting some snacks, getting all the tickets. Could be over $100 to go watch a movie, easily. Whereas, if you wait a few months, and you weren't super excited about it because you heard some bad press, maybe you just saw one bad thing. Honestly, one bad thing could do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're comparing that to the idea of a $1 Redbox rental.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a lot of wasted money if you're not that into it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if all you had heard was this is going to be amazing, and all the press was behind you and all the critics were behind you, yeah, you might actually take the family out. And
yep.
Maybe you had the same experience with Redbox at home that you did in the theater. We don't know. We just know that for you, it wasn't worth an extra $100. Yeah, it matters. The critic part matters, but mm-hmm. it doesn't matter as far as like the ultimate amount of money they make, as long as it's still profitable.
I think it matters as far as the ultimate amount of money they make, because that all ties in. Like, a family not going out and spending $100 versus someone going to a Redbox, that's a problem.
It is, but it's a problem the industry's dealing with in general, so there's that to consider.
Sure.
And also, if each movie is still making, you know, $100 million or so... I'm sure there's an equation they're looking at. I'm literally sure it's an equation that people are bringing to them and saying, hey, this is what our numbers are saying. You made this amount of money in this, you know, in this formula, in this environment. That's a guaranteed amount of money. Maybe you don't mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it gets below a certain point where you go, hey, you should make some changes. Like, the money's still there, but you're not making enough to guarantee next time you do it, you make that money. You
know? Right. So, you mentioned it a minute ago. James Wan has announced that the Aquaman trailer will debut at San Diego Comic-Con. And when he put up the announcement, he put up this very bright blue picture with the Aquaman symbol on it and everything. And Twitter user J.A. Huggins93 reacted to the logo saying, "You can tell they got a direct order to make everything, quote, less dark. This logo is the opposite of all previous DCU posters." And Juan responded to him and said, "Yes, from me."
That's hilarious. And some part of me wishes, because I think it would be true in general, that the poster was just full black with like a tiny light somewhere in the background that's like, I mean, barely visible. Just barely. No shapes discernible whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then somebody was like, "What the hell is going on?" And you're like, "This is what underwater looks like."
Right.
"The sun can't reach me. What do you want?"
Right. All right. So HW put out another picture this week of what is being described as, quote, "an ancient meeting place called the Council of the Kings that's fallen into ruin." It's not in Atlantis. We still haven't even seen that yet. It wasn't in Justice League. It's on the outskirts. So, and I'm just going to read this as they put it, because when explaining this picture, I mean, we've got like seven giant statues holding up their like tridents, you know? And so it says, "One, when Atlantis sank into the ocean, it split into seven kingdoms. Each statue you see in the distance represents one of the original kings. The Atlantean army on the right side of the photo with white sharks, those are the Atlantean army riding the sharks. King Nereus of the kingdom of Zebel and his men ride giant sea dragons, the giant seahorses we talked about a few weeks ago. Apparently, James Wan wanted to create the fearsome creatures, Safran notes, as a way of subverting the comic image of Aquaman riding a seahorse. In the center right, you can see Orm.
I love that.
You can see Orm on top of a massive alligator-like Tylosaur. And behind him, Volko, Willem Dafoe, is on a giant black hammerhead shark. I don't know what to think of this. Like, I'm looking at it, and it looks awesome. But it's so ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous in a good way.
Yeah, the premise of this is an underwater kingdom.
I know. It's one of those, like, I don't know. I got a little bit of the feeling of the Aquaman in Batman the Brave and the Bold feeling. Like,
oh, for sure.
Where I was, yeah, just,
you should.
Like, my rational mind wanted to eschew it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But I was giggling like a little boy who just heard his first fart. You know, like, I was just...
Yeah.
I kind of hope that's the kind of fun that we have with Aquaman. Like, I just want to see some weird shit. There is going to be a serious...
I feel like there's a moment, though, where I'm going... I don't think they're going to have fun with that scene. I think that's going to be a scene where I think to myself, is that man seriously riding a shark in a battle?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goddamn, yes, that man is seriously riding a shark in a battle.
Well, to me, that's fun. Like, that man... I'm not talking about, like, Guardians of the Galaxy tongue-in-cheek kind of fun. I'm like, this is ridiculous and amazing.
Oh, no, I don't want that dialogue. That's going to be my insider dialogue. That's going to be what happens in my head.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So...
I expect to be amazed, honestly, by that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a feeling. It looks good, man. It looks good. And I love that they're going to take that chance. Because, yes, it could be ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. I don't mind ridiculous, though. Like, I really don't.
I mean, put it this way. There's no way he doesn't know the phrase "jump the shark." And he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That takes balls.
So Patrick Wilson and James Wan have revealed a little bit about Orm and Orm's motives. Wilson says he's kind of an echo warrior. He's got a very clear gripe with the surface world, which has been polluting his oceans for centuries, and that's something for me. I'm sure for you, too. It's very easy to understand. If somebody was just constantly polluting our air and ruining how we lived. And then James Wan says King Orm has had enough of our surface world shit, pollution, and disrespect for the planet. So I'm starting to get like a very Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home feel off of this. You know what I mean? Like, let's save the whales.
Hey, don't go that far with it.
Save the whales, save the future. I like that he
made it. I like that he made it way more of a property situation. Like, imagine you had a neighbor And every fucking morning, you sat there drinking a cup of coffee and watched him take his dog out, let the dog shit, and take the little scooper and just toss it into your yard casually and walk back inside.
I mean, I've dealt with that. I've seen they just walk the yard right the dog right into our yard and shit right in it. You know what I mean? Like,
and then walk in like no big deal.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That could be infuriating after a while.
You know,
I get it.
What's infuriating is like we have like a sloped front yard. I absolutely know exactly what they're talking about here. Like, every time I go outside, there's more trash in our front yard because people drive by and they're just like, oh, look, that yard slopes down. You won't see it from the road. And they just toss their shit into our yard. It's super annoying.
Yeah. You have a heavy slant, too. It's like, by the time it's in my rear view, I won't even know I've made a poor life decision.
Because I'm a goldfish.
I can forget I'm a shitty person by the time I make it 45 feet.
And Amber Heard gave us some insight into Mera. She says, Justice League highlighted her militaristic side. In Aquaman, we have a fuller picture, not just of her as Mera of Atlantis, but also we see her struggle in the surface world in civilian clothes. One of my favorite scenes is her first time on the surface world, and she's forced to dress as a normal human. We wanted to honor the comic books. I wanted to stick with how she's depicted in the books in a superficial way. I wanted to go full comic book as to how she looks. But it's in the nuance of her personality where I wanted to push the boundaries. She has a natural antagonistic view of the surface world, which you can understand if you look at the conditions of the oceans today, how somebody living in the ocean would feel that way. We had time to fully flesh out her character. Jason becomes more Atlantean, more super, and mine becomes more human. She also says that if you dig that, she says, I'm allergic to being the damsel, the two-dimensional archetype of what women are often limited to in the industry, especially in the superhero world. Zach got me at Warrior Queen. He said, you get a sword and crown. And I'm like, okay. So that was a Zack Snyder thing. That was Zack Snyder pushing for her to be a very empowered type of female in the movie. He's the one that sold it.
Makes sense. Yeah, I buy it.
Yeah. Now, over to Shazam, Kelvin Chavez, the editor-in-chief of the Splash Report, this is the guy that founded the Latino Review, tweeted out, just got word that the Shazam trailer will make its debut at this year's SDCC. That is rumor. That is not confirmed. And I doubt that it would be like a full trailer. Even though it's fully produced, it's, you know, I don't know if they're going to go back for reshoots just yet, or if they, I can't remember if they already have. I'm terrible at, I am a goldfish. But I think it would just be a teaser if it does show up at SDCC. And I can't imagine that it won't to some degree. Like, I think they probably will at least, at the very least, have a panel. But I imagine if there is a trailer, it's going to be a teaser trailer, not like a full, you know, 225 to 248 or whatever it is.
I'd be 50-50.
Yeah?
Well, no. I'm 75-25. 75% teaser would make a lot of sense. 25%, maybe a full trailer. And then let's subtract, I don't know, 5% off each of those. And let me just say 10% that I just thought of. I did just say I think they're keeping it on the DL. And maybe that's, maybe Shazam's being iced for a second too until they got everything where they kind of want it.
Yeah, I think we get like a, I think we get a teaser. Something like the first BVS still, teaser at SDCC.
Gun to my head, I'm saying teaser.
Yeah. So there is a ton of Wonder Woman 1984 stuff out there. A lot of footage, a lot of like, you know, people just grabbing shit. I'm not gonna talk about it though. I will say,
I'm actively gonna plead, amateur people on set, please stop.
Yes, and you
please
know,
stop.
We talked a little bit about it last week, and that's gonna be it. Like, unless something really like non-spoilery happens behind the scenes. And an official talks about it, comes out with it because of it, releases something. We're just gonna stop talking about it because it's just too much. There's already too much like stuff starting to pop up about the plot and whatnot, and people are already starting to make rash and ridiculous judgments about the movie based on
dubious predictions. Yeah.
Yeah, it's stupid. But I will say they removed a background actor.
It really takes the fun out of it to fucking micromanage production from day six, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was like day one and people were complaining about some stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, a background actor was removed for taking photos. And they've released, like, you know, like a memo saying, like, hey, you know, keep your phone in your pocket, asshole.
Yes.
Now, Gal Gadot...
That's part of what bothers me about it, though, is there's no point other than you want to be the person who just had the insider information.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit of star-fucking to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If there's another explanation, please let me know, but that's all I can think of. It's just a little bit of star-fucking that ends up being spoilers for the rest of us, and damn it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Calm it down.
So Gal Gadot posted an official Wonder Woman picture, and it is like her looking awesome, as usual, in front of a big wall of lights. It's sort of like a circular thing. It's the whiskey bar at the Watergate Hotel is what the background is. Gorgeous picture. Very well done.
Yeah, it is.
It is the background on my phone.
Because it was a great picture.
Oh, man. So this is really fun. Jeff Johns has given us our first line. He gave us the first line of the Green Lantern Corps script. And he says, thanks for all the crazy support today as I take on my dream gig. This was on Facebook. I especially wanted to give a shout out to my colleagues and friends at DC. Our shared passion burns bright. I have waited a lifetime to write this, fade in on a green ring soaring through space. And a couple of different places on the internet has pointed out that, you know, this is something we've seen a few times in Jeff Johns' work in the comics. And they said as often, like comicbook.com actually wrote, it's often preceded by, quote, ring status, Green Lantern deceased, scan for replacement, sentient initiated.
While that is true,
mm-hmm.
I do feel like he's doing two things to us. One, dude's good at PR.
Mm-hmm.
He's just trying to fuel the, you know, we're searching for the Green Lantern ourselves, kind of meta theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two, maybe it is one of those stories he's kind of always wanted to tell.
Oh, I know. It's definitely one that he's always wanted to tell.
And they did just let him off the leash. And they, you know, yeah. If you're dubious because, oh, I've seen this before, just give him a minute.
Oh, I'm not dubious. That's exciting to me.
Oh, I'm not accusing you. I'm sure.
I'm like, oh, hell yeah. Let's do that.
I'm quite sure you're in favor.
All right, so...
your only critique would be like, whoever finds it, can we not watch their dad die 17 times in the film?
Yep. So, I don't know how many people would actually know this, but on the Man of Steel Blu-ray, there is a little special feature where eventually it tells you Bertrand was named Bertrand. Beware Bertrand's Doomsday or something like that. You know, and Bertrand was the dude in the comics that created Doomsday. So everybody's like, "Oh man, Doomsday's out there." Someone basically asked Snyder on Vero if that meant that the real Doomsday was still out there since the Doomsday in BVS was created by Lex Luthor. And Snyder says, yeah, he's still out there.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I have probably rationalized that some other way in the past, mm-hmm. but that still actually really does make sense to me.
Yeah.
Like I literally, there's some part of me that feels like I'm contradicting myself right now, but still, that's possible.
Yeah. All right, so we are at the end of movie news, and we're going to end it out with some sad news. You know, we just a few weeks ago, scant weeks ago when we were on break, we lost Margot Kidder. That was the Lois Lane of Superman 78. And now word has come down that Richard Allen Greenberg, the designer for the opening titles of Superman the movie, has passed away, apparently following a bout of appendicitis. He was 71 years old. And you have absolutely seen that this guy was a giant in the industry and you didn't even know it. Like, you have absolutely seen a ton of his stuff, most likely. Like, I don't mean you, Jason. I mean just people, but you probably have to. So this dude worked on, like, the opening titles of Alien and Altered States, The World According to Garp, The Untouchables, Dirty Dancing, Death Becomes Her, Star Trek Nemesis, Edge of Darkness, Bram Stoker's Dracula of 92, Independence Day. He worked on Lethal Weapons, Lethal Weapon movies, The Matrix, Xanadu. Like, they did visual effects for Xanadu.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Hawk, Family Business, Goodfellas, Devil's Advocate, Phantoms. Like, he directed a movie called Little Monsters with Fred Savage and Howie Mandel. He also directed an episode of HBO's Tales from the Crypt in 1990. So, kind of a giant in the film industry. And he is now gone.
That's a pretty impressive resume. Yeah.
All right. So, we're going to end this news segment out. The DC film news segment out. We're going to pop over to DC TV and talk about some stuff over there. If you're not following us, go join the group. Facebook.com/groups/DC On Screen Podcast. Or call us 205-259-6331. We'll put you on the air, just like we did with a couple of distinguished gentlemen that we will have at the end of the TV news segment.
For sure.
First up, Gotham. Over the weekend, executive producer Danny Cannon popped over to Instagram and revealed that the fifth season would be entering production on July 23rd.
Sounds right.
Yeah, so... I don't know. I guess look forward to assholes taking pictures behind the scenes. I don't know. Now, this next piece of news is, I feel, exciting and damning. We did...
Those are fun.
Yeah, I know. Lucifer, it did get picked up for a fourth season on Netflix. I don't think we actually reported that last week. I think it happened right after we reported for last week. But Lucifer has been picked up for a fourth season on Netflix. It is a 10-episode order.
And that made me pretty happy.
It does start filming soon. It's going to be August-ish, Joe Henderson says. Ildi Modrovich says, we were going to have two parts to it anyway, so we'll just tell a really strong, gnarly first part. So basically what they're saying here is that the fourth season is just going to be basically what they were planning out for the first half of the season. So that sounds to me like they're not changing how focused they are, but Henderson did chime in and he did say that the shortened order, quote, lets us concentrate the story and focus it, and that's what's really exciting about this. We have a really strong first half that is going to make for an amazing story. I hope that, like, roots out some of the procedural bullshit. And
it has to.
As of the interview, it doesn't sound like they had really talked to Netflix a whole lot about it. They did say that the change in network won't necessarily mean a change in episode length, unless the episode calls for it, which is nice, because that's really what you want. Like, Modrovich says, we'll probably stick roughly to our 43 minutes. That's part of what we're going to talk about talk to Netflix about. I think we might have a bit of room for flexibility, hopefully. You probably will. I've been watching Netflix a lot. They're pretty flexible on their runtime.
Yeah, there's some freedom here.
So if there's a scene we love and we don't want to cut it, we're hoping that now we won't have to, and we're not suddenly going to have hour and a half episodes. But here's the part that's pretty damning. Despite the halved episode order, the showrunners do not plan to structure the show's Netflix debut as its final season. Modrovich says there's always the potential for more. Didn't you learn your lesson?
Yeah, that's the part that devastated me. That, and it didn't sound like they had a great idea for the second half of what they wanted to do in this story. It sounded like they said, like, we should have two parts, and in the first part we should have this happen, and this happen, and this happen, and then we'll figure it out, right? We'll figure it out. It's mm-hmm. cool. And then it just sounds like they're going to use 10 episodes and do the first part. It does literally sound like they did not learn a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just... And to be fair, why should they? They were picked up.
Right. They were saved.
They were rewarded for their poor behavior.
I think even if you're not down, I will watch it and I will put up a review based on how I feel at some point.
Oh, I'll watch it.
All right, cool.
I can't not watch it.
Yeah, we've invested too much time. And...
Oh, that's... Yeah. There's some entrapment happening here, for sure.
Yeah, the actual celestial...
Pot committed might be another term.
The celestial portion is pretty compelling, I'll say.
Yeah, if it was that, like, the last episode by itself, if that last episode had another 10 minutes worth of wrapping things up even, I could have dealt with it.
Absolutely. All right, yeah, so...
There was a lot to explore, but damn it, man. Doesn't sound like they've got their head around what I wanted them to do.
It kind of doesn't. It kind of doesn't. I don't know. Oh, and by the way, those 10 episodes don't count the two episodes that were supposed to air in season 4 that Fox aired. So I don't know what they're going to do with that.
That's just out there.
I don't know if they'll, like, stick them in, you know, the fourth season where they roughly think they should have gone or what.
they could also just kind of throw them up front because they own them and who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Just here's a couple teaser episodes. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Netflix, you're thinking, hey, let's try to rebrand this. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's some hardcore. I'd like to be in the room before I even made a guess kind of stuff.
Yeah. So CW has released their fall premiere schedule, and so we've got premiere dates for all of our DC-related shows. Tuesday, October 9th, it's going to be the, I guess, 7, 8 Central, or, yeah, 7 Central, 8 Eastern,
mm-hmm.
The Flash. 9 to 10 is going to be Black Lightning season premiere. Then Sunday, October 14th, the 8 to 9 slot is going to be Supergirl season premiere. Monday, October 15th is the, from the 8 to 9 slot is going to be Arrow season premiere. And then Monday, October 22nd is going to be a new episode of Arrow from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, DC's Legends of Tomorrow season premiere. So, yeah. We're looking at, mid to late October for all the premieres.
Yeah. What we're saying really is, you've got a couple months to kind of relax.
Mm-hmm.
Take a deep breath, you know. Figure out some form of meditation or yoga that works for you, and then it's going to get active.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get active. Because, I mean, DC streaming is going to come around. Like, oof.
Yeah. Don't know when this all is going down.
Just go ahead and plan your retirement for, like, early August.
Yep. So over on The Flash, The Flash has promoted Jessica Parker Kennedy to a series regular for the next season. That's Nora, the West Allen daughter. Mm-hmm. And The Flash has promoted Hartley Sawyer, that's Ralph, to series regular in season 5.
Good with both.
Yep.
Thumbs up.
Over on Arrow, Stephen Amell did an interview, and I don't think I even wrote down where. Was it Music Australia? Was that something? I don't know. Is that right? Anyway, he did an interview.
I wish I had more details. Yeah, I did read the thing, but
I did too. Music. Anyway, said some interesting things. I have thinned it out so as not to speak from just Stephen Amell's personal viewpoint on things. He said a whole bunch of stuff about how he feels like certain characters that they created on Arrow was integral to the canon and stuff. And it is and it isn't. It's all subjective. It's really hard to get in, to dig in and say, like, oh, you can never have... And he kind of was. He was saying, oh, you can't have a Green Arrow movie without having Felicity Smoke. You absolutely certainly can. You can do that, dude.
You for real can. I mean, you could reboot the series and not do it. But I get what he's saying, and it's Stephen Amell, man.
Yeah, but...
He's a puppy. He's got that kind of energy, and we always loved it. Like, I love that he thinks that, and I love that he believes it.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily true, but no. I can't prove him wrong either.
But I also believe that a lot of the characters they've created or you know, reinvigorated, as he put it, also are integral to the mythos, in as much as they have those characters and love for those characters have really sustained and in a lot of ways been the catalyst for people in the mainstream to know who Green Arrow is, and it's kept that IP alive, you know. And say what you will about any iteration of any of these characters, but whatever's out right now that's, you know, garnering fans, that's keeping the IP alive. So, you know, everybody get off his dick, man. But anyway.
I mean, it easily could be true.
Yeah.
Easily could be true. Like, in the universe right now where they're writing it in Justice League,
mm-hmm.
Green Arrow's seriously got the potential to destroy the entire Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's in the comics right now as of this moment.
Yeah. So anyway, he does talk about season 7. He says, we have a new showrunner this year, Beth Schwartz, who's been with the show since season 1. The writers have a very clear vision of what they want season 7 to be and what I asked them to do, and it's not up to me. But what I asked of them is to not just assume that we have an 8th season. I wanted them to write, like, if you have a good idea and you have something you've always wanted to do or see on the show, then just do it. Do it right now. He says, I think that's one of the things I'm getting out of what they've planned for season 7. We're not writing like we're guaranteed something beyond this, because we're not. Nobody is. I want them to really push forward and take the fact we have a certain license and a certain respect from the fans to take some chances. Now, he also... He also talked about getting negative responses from the show's fan base and how he welcomes that. He says, to a degree, he says, obviously you want to lean into things that you think fans would want, right? Concurrently, I'm all for the things that make fans mad, because mad is no different than happy. The only thing that I don't want is indifference. I always joke with fans about my alter ego, Evil Story Steve. If you were to tell me, you know, that four people died in the season premiere of Arrow in season 7, I'd be very sad. But my alter ego, Evil Steve, would be like, oh, that's very exciting. Why did that happen? So I think that making fans happy clearly is what you want to do when you're on a show in general, because you want people to keep watching, as long as you're not afraid to lean into things that may make them go, but why would you do that? I hate that. That's awful. Because that's not actually what they mean. If someone screams out on Twitter, I'm going to stop watching the show, they're probably not going to stop watching the show. You know what I mean? I think that is true and false.
I do know what he means.
I do too. But you know, again, in my own personal life, like, I know people are like, ah, they killed this character off. That was bullshit. I'm not watching it anymore. And they're just serious.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
People yeah, just like, get mad and drop shit.
To the extent that you can kind of do anything and lose people, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But in the sense that he's talking about, you have to keep stirring the fucking beehive.
Absolutely. Like, no matter what, and you're going to keep losing viewers.
The more and more I read that interview, the same one you did, I kept thinking, why is he not, like...
an executive producer on the show?
Why is he not an AP on the show? Like, he's got it. He gets it. You need to piss us off a little bit. You need to kill some people every now and then. Like, there have to be stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it needs to be rewarding in a certain way. He gets it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He also says, I think that you will see some very, very new and exciting characters in season 7. Characters that have a canon in DC. Excuse me. And that's exciting. I am just still hoping for Ted Kord.
Oh, you
as
should.
As always.
Because that's what they've told us is going to happen for the better part of a decade now.
Yeah. And by the way, Amell posted a picture of himself on Twitter, and he was wearing a Smoke Technologies t-shirt, like the same logo from Legends of Tomorrow when they went to the future.
Sure.
And like, sure. Yeah. And on the Twitter post, it's just like a little emoji of a dude shrugging. And I'm like, oh, he didn't put up this for no reason.
Yeah. Also, I love that he's telling people, man, whatever you've got in your back pocket, throw it. Mm-hmm. Throw it out right now. Like, just throw it against the wall. Let's do this thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm down for all that.
And I do kind of believe, because, like, that's the personality that I feel like, I don't know. I mean, we don't, it's not like we know him. We just know his social media presence, and that's it. But I do feel like he is, like, walking into the office going, hey, you know we should do this, right? I do feel like he's actually talking to people.
Yeah.
And he's right. Like, do it, man. We don't know. Your numbers are declining every year. It's happening. Yeah, now, that's as a matter of course. It's not...
Yeah.
They're not declining at a rate that is... It's not precipitous. It doesn't mean people are just, like, bailing in truckfuls. It's just that every year your show's on the air, you will lose people. It's
Seinfeld is not the norm.
No. Yeah. There are exceptions to this, but generally, every year you're there, less people are there. That's how it works. And I like that he's trying to push them to kind of like close it up. If we get another season, we'll deal with it then, but let's do this. Fantastic.
Like, I don't know how many people who listen to our show have watched Lost, but like, I was pretty on board that from maybe like I caught up to, I think, start watching season 2. Mm-hmm. And about midway through that first season, they introduced the idea that there's a hatch somewhere on the island. They don't know what it goes to. I knew people in my own life who were like, I stopped watching that shit when they brought up that hatch. I'm like, this is bullshit. Like, just something as small as, hey, you're on an island of mystery. Oh, hey, look, there's a hatch. No, I'm out. Why would you be in the first place?
Oh, I love this mysterious island. Oh, I don't like that mystery at all.
I don't care about what's in the hatch. I'm gone. And like, as I like looked around, because I was like obsessed with Lost when it was on. And as I looked around on the internet, like, so many people were like, is this show still on? I was out with that stupid hatch. And I'm like, are you serious? Why were so many against the hatch?
It can happen with anything, man.
Like, you just like any little creative decision on any show, you hemorrhage viewers.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. Every single, like, that's, I love that when, like, there's an actor doing things, they call it making choices.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ultimately happens. Every single thing you do, from filming to all the decisions in between, to everyone that's appearing on screen, to everyone that edits it later, choices. Yeah. Every choice you make, and as a human, we all know this, every choice you make, you maybe lost somebody.
Yeah. I mean, episode one, season two of Lost, when they found the, it opens with what is inside the hatch. It's all like, when I saw that shit, I could almost hear the TVs just turning off. It excited the shit out of me. I was like, oh, that's weird. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. You can hear people throwing their Nielsen boxes against the wall. I get it. Just all right. Pissing on the wreckage. I get it.
So that hashtag show, to bring them up again, mm-hmm. have recently put out some...
dubious people.
Those dubious people. They have they've put out a couple of different character descriptions for the upcoming season of Legends of Tomorrow. The first is for a female Asian character in her 20s named Allie, who would be joining in a series regular role.
Mm-hmm.
The description is as such, she is somewhere in her 20s as a young woman who is searching deeply for her mission in life. The casting description also goes on to say, teased as a mega intelligent and sharp as heck person, Allie tends to sometimes be a little aloof and being too distracted by her own imagination as well as romantic impulses. She loves young adult literature as well as fantasy novels, hence her hunger and curiosity for adventures. Hence, it sounds like she's going to be a big... friend of Ray and Nate. Despite her disappointment with the state of the world, Allie continues to keep an optimistic head as much as possible with any situation that she faces. Allie also has a deep love for animals, as she believes each animal has a purpose to fulfill on our planet. We don't know if Allie is a cover name. I can't think of anyone from DC that fits any of that, but
no, I mean,
there's
a do an Animal Man variation, but
I guess you could. Or I guess they could. There's a second casting here for Hank Haywood, looks like Nate's father, as a recurring role. He is somewhere in his 60s, and while he is loved by many, his son Nate is not one of them. Their relationship is a very mixed one, as Hank is always on the son's back for not doing more with his life. Having served in the military, Hank is now working for the Department of Defense, carrying a Woody Harrelson-y charm. Hank takes traditional values very seriously, such as patriotism and sacrifice, but he isn't big about his beliefs, and while Nate may have had his list of failures in life, Hank loves his son as much as a father possibly could.
Ah, I'll never live up to him, but I can't quite hate him complex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nothing about gotcha. That makes me more interested in Legends of Tomorrow.
No, I'm pretty bored with that one. But could be portrayed well. Who knows?
Could be. I can't wait to see if this is true, and if it is, I want to see what they believe is a Woody Harrelson-y type of person.
Yeah. I'm more excited about what I can only surmise as maybe Animal Woman before.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I'm more excited about that, whoever the hell that is.
Mm. So, hashtag...
It's a mystery there, at least.
Oh, sorry. yeah. Omega Underground... is saying that the Swamp Thing live-action series could start in the fall, production in the fall of this year. And they're saying that the filming will take place in North Carolina. And it seems a little odd, but, you know, The Hunger Games was shot there, so I can see it.
No, there's some good greenery.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And hashtag show those dubious people have uncovered a pair of casting descriptions for Swamp Thing. One calls for a late 40s to late 50s actor, quote, in the mold of Lawrence Fishburne or Jeff Goldblum to play a, quote, smart, slick, and cunning villain. That sounds like Anton Arcane to me, he's Abby Arcane's uncle and scientist and magician who tried to cure Swamp Thing, or Alec Holland, can't even talk, Alec Holland, boo, that still sounded weird. But winds up using the swamp powers for himself for evil reasons. Some people are saying that it could be General Avery Carlton Sutherland, who would be the president and CEO of the company that Abby works for. And there's another casting here for a character in his mid-30s who is the sheriff of the town and former high school sweetheart of Abby. That would be Matthew Cable. And he's described as a good guy with anger issues. So... it should be noted, though, that he does, in the comics, he gets killed, resurrected, given powers, and then he crosses paths with the Doom Patrol, which is another property they're developing over there.
Oh, that could be fun.
Yep. Over to Animated, the Death of Superman movie leaked. And all I ask, really, is I've already seen a ton of spoilers. Like, you know, it's not out yet. Stop. All right, so over to voicemails. We have a voicemail from Travis Hines, and we're going to play that right now.
Hey, guys. This is Travis Hines, Travis_156, occasional guest podcaster on the DC Daily Drop, calling in. Been listening to you guys regularly, and I got to say, the last few episodes have been spectacular. I want to touch on three things. First, the hate for Geoff Johns. I'm completely in agreement with you, David, that this is completely unnecessary. I don't understand where it's coming from. You see Zack Snyder speaking when he was on BVS about how much he enjoyed having Geoff Johns working with him and the knowledge Johns had. He was like his own DC encyclopedia. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you and Nathan, but I'll hold off on the amount of cussing that Nathan did. I think he filled up the volume in that. So yeah, Dave, I agree 100% with your take on that. You hit the nail right on the head, and I think people have to calm down and maybe look at the big exec who would have been granted a bonus if the movie came out when it did, and I hope his head is the next to fall. The second point from your air review, I know you guys didn't say it, but I see it a lot lately, that Oliver Queen had his Tony Stark moment from Iron Man 1, which I totally do not agree with. Sure, there are some similarities, but Tony relatively walked away unscathed and free and had no consequences for his actions until Civil War, like 12, 16 movies in. So yeah, I don't think Oliver told people he was the Green Arrow and went directly to a Supermax prison that houses metahumans and the worst of the worst criminals. One guy just walked away and went to his mansion. So, yeah, I don't think they're similar at all. And I must say that the season finale of Arrow was the most enjoyable out of the four so far. Supergirl is coming up on Monday, but I must say I thought Arrow's finale was the best. I don't know if that excuses it from the first half of the season and all the mismanagement and not good writing. And the third comment is, I'm just wondering if does every episode end with Jordan's Fat Cat updates? I'm glad he's enjoying it. I'm just a little worried because if this wedding doesn't go off without a hitch, I think someone's going to have to check on him and make sure he's still going to read DC and he's still full-blown DC. those are the three things. I just want to thank you guys for having a great podcast, and hope to call in again soon. Keep up the solid work, boys.
All right, Travis, dude, thank you for calling in, man. First off, Geoff Johns. Now, you said you didn't know where that was coming from. There are some people, I think it was a cameraman. I believe it was a cameraman who worked on Justice League. And he's been spreading a lot of crap about Johns on Twitter. And honestly, I think a lot of it is just misdirected anger about what happened with Justice League. And I don't know. I know Zach said a lot of good stuff about Geoff Johns during BVS, but that could also be him toeing the line. Because, like, you got to know they sign, like, NDAs and stuff. So, like, they can't just be, like, talking shit about the higher ups, you know? I hope it's not that. I really do hope Geoff Johns is a decent person. For all I know, he could be a raging dick. But I hope that's not the case. I certainly don't doubt the man's talent and skill at this juncture.
It's just, if that's what's happening, that he is just a raging dick, this is just the first time we've heard about it in his entire career. Mm-hmm. And while that is entirely possible,
yeah,
we need a little more evidence.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, in some years, I imagine we'll start getting fuller stories. And even if, like, possibly, as much as I like Zack Snyder, even if he were to say, like, to come out at some point and say, like, yeah, well, he really screwed me over, I'm not even 100% sure that's evidence enough. Because, you know, Zack Snyder is a dude with emotions who was heavily emotionally invested in a project that got taken away from him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's a rough one to adjudicate from our angle. Yeah. You know?
Whoa. I almost knocked the whole thing down on top of myself. All right, so to your second point with Ollie and Tony, clearly things, you know, were very different between Ollie and Tony's, like, revealing of their secret identities. Clearly things went south for Ollie in a way it never did for Tony. But it is funny that you mentioned the Supermax, because like that was something I noticed on my second watch of the finale, and I accidentally watched it again. My wife was catching up, and she watched it, and I sat down like two episodes before and kind of watched it all. But
you unwittingly watched it again.
Yeah, and I noticed that Ollie said he was being taken to the Supermax, and that was Green Arrow Escape from Supermax was a story that David Goyer was trying to make into a movie. Where like it's Green Arrow for like the first 10 minutes, and then like he's arrested and his secret identity is revealed, and then he's in a Supermax prison and he's trying to, it's like Alcatraz, Goyer said, and he has to team up with, in some cases, some of the very same villains he's responsible for incarcerating in order to get out and clear his name. And of course there's tons of people trying to kill him while he's in there. And Goyer said, "We've populated the prison with all sorts of B and C villains from the DC universe. For the fans, there will be a lot. There will be all sorts of characters that the hardcore comic book junkies will know, and they're all going to be there under their human names, and no one is wearing a costume. But there will be a lot of characters with powers and things like that." And to me, that sounds like a very possible direction for the first like two or three episodes of the season.
For sure. It's one of the times where I've really been behind like a Goyer idea.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded good.
It sounded fun.
Yeah.
As for Jordan Valdez, well, to answer your question about whether or not he's going to call in about Batcat every week, here he is with a new voicemail.
For sure.
Jordan Valdez of the Multiverse Musics podcast, everyone.
Hey there, Dave and Jason. This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in once again. First off, I just wanted to say, Jason, I was so glad to hear that you loved Batman number 48 as much as I did, and all of what Tom King is doing with the Joker, because, yeah, that was phenomenal, and I'm glad you got David to check it out, and hopefully, David, I hope that means that this will just convince you even more that you got to check out the rest of this run, because it has been, like I said, outstanding. We're one issue away from the wedding now, and I'm going through just seeing all these beautiful, beautiful Batcat variant covers that are coming out for issue number 50. And I'm just in bat euphoria right now and so excited for July 4th when issue number 50 drops. But the other thing I wanted to touch on this voicemail was you guys were speculating about perhaps us seeing David Kane on one of the DC TV shows soon. I actually do think that's going to happen, but not quite in the way that you guys were speculating about, and certainly not on the show that you guys are speculating about. Yeah, I know you guys were talking about maybe he'll show up on the DC Universe streaming service, but here's where I actually think he's going to show up, is on Gotham, because obviously we saw Mother and Orphan in that No Man's Land tease at the end of No Man's Land, the season 4 finale, and we saw Mother and Orphan there. And at first I thought that was going to be Cassandra Cain and they were just changing things up. I mean, age discrepancies from what they are in the comics are nothing new, so I thought we were going to see Cassandra. But then my buddy Joshua Lappin-Bertoni from the Batman universe alerted me to the fact that it's not going to be Cassandra, and that they've actually got a little boy. Well, we couldn't see him because he had the mask on and it was really dark. But yeah, it was a little boy that they had cast playing him in that scene. I think it's going to be David Kane, Cassandra's father, because when they brought back Cassandra in the New 52 towards the end in the Batman and Robin Eternal Maxi series, which I thought was really, really good, such a great story about the Robins. But anyway, when they brought her back in that story, and David Kane was heavily involved as well, he was the first Orphan. And so he was going by Orphan before Cassandra wound up adopting that title, which she's been using since. But yeah, so I think, and it actually makes more sense in terms of his age in as it pertains to, as it relates to Bruce Wayne's age on the show, it actually makes a lot more sense that it would be David Kane, that we're seeing there. So I think we're going to see a young David Kane on Gotham next season. So I just thought I'd throw out that speculation. And, Batcat forever from the first kiss to the last. Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Jordan, buddy, thank you for calling in. We do hope you're going to be okay if something happens to Selena, like, for real. But,
And I do worry about it.
I'm a little worried.
Being up to date.
Yeah. So, I don't know what that means.
49 was an entirely... It's a whole new level of Joker storytelling.
Mm. Well, I am on the fence about whether or not I think I will like it, but I will get to it at some point. I will absolutely read the storyline for sure. Too much has been made of it. I'll get to it. The David Kane on Gotham thing is a really cool theory.
Yeah.
And I think I would be more down for it if we had more seasons of Gotham. But if we're talking about 10 to 13 episodes, probably 10 based on what we've heard, I kind of just want them to focus on wrapping it the hell up.
Need you to wrap it up. Exactly.
Just want them to focus on the characters they have a lot of strands hanging out there for.
That being said, they did show us these little, you know, stingerish things, mm-hmm. and, well, they got to wrap that up too now. So
they don't have to.
Deal with that. Oh, they do. They do.
Maybe they will.
They do.
Okay.
It's on there, and you know you have your finale, like, you know where you end. Make it happen.
Fingers crossed.
I'm sure there'll be a couple of loose strings.
I'm sure there's going to be some loose strings, but I do think that the David Kane story, especially if you're going back to David as an orphan, is a little too deep to really flesh out the way you'd want to see it done. You know what I mean? For the amount of time they have left.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I'm persnickety, and God knows it's never stopped Gotham from just doing whatever the hell they wanted. And chopping up storylines and making some weird shit happen. But, you know, it's weird because David Kane is one of those, like, lower tier villains. Like, absolute badass, absolute, like, really cool villain. But just doesn't have that mainstream, I don't know if I would say appeal, but mainstream notoriety. Where you could say, see, and that's how David Kane started. And they're like, who? Like,
well, that's the thing I like about this theory is... it fits Gotham really well,
mm-hmm.
except for the event that we only have a few episodes left. Otherwise, completely agree. This would be a wonderful opportunity to explore him for like a couple seasons.
I mean,
I kind of wish they'd done him instead of, what's his name? Oh, God, I can't remember. The guy who played, dear God, what am I missing? Ezreal.
Oh, Galavan.
Galavan, thank you. Like, for the character arc, that would have made sense, too, for David Kane, but...
Yeah. Oh, man. You don't want to know what I was thinking.
It's been a minute. What were you thinking? He's had a stroke. Do I need to drive over there?
It crossed my mind. You were like, sure. The guy who played Dear God, and I went, George Burns?
I was trying to think of the movie he did the other day, and yeah, Dear God. Yeah, that's good.
Anyway. All right. So I guess that's gotta wrap it up, I think. Thank you, Jordan.
Oh, one thing.
What's up, man?
Jordan.
Yeah.
You gotta be freaking out a little bit, buddy, right?
Call in.
That's all I'm saying.
Let us know. Let us know how you feel about the freak out. And if you'd like to come join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/DC On Screen Podcast. Call us like Jordan, like Travis, voicemail 205-259-6331. And we'll get to you, throw you on the air, respond in kind as we have to these fine gentlemen who've graced us with their presence on today's episode. And I would like to point out that we are quickly approaching episode 500 of our show. So if you would like to leave us a voicemail for the 500th episode to be played on that, we'll take those two and hold them over for the 500th episode. And I don't know. That's it. We'll be back next week.
See you later.
Write us sweet things on Twitter. Caress our bosom.
Well, sure. Mostly the iTunes thing.
Yeah, the iTunes thing is the most important at this point.
Way more important.
Yeah. Go write us a review on iTunes if
fuck
you like
our bisms.
You know how you listen to our voices, you can't see us, you can't touch us. The way you stroke our bosom, go to iTunes, leave us a review. Until next week, keep some DC on your screen.
Oh.
Our opening narration was from Dan Juergens' The History of the DC Universe, Part 3 of 10, as featured in DC 52, Week 4. It was performed by me, David C. Robertson. Intro music by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Future Elevators, could be found on Spotify or future-elevators.com. Our introduction was performed by Effie Opelders of the fantastic podcast Stealing the Remote, which lives on SoundCloud. It can also be found on iTunes and Stitcher. We are proudly in partnership with TV Time, the TV show calendar and social media site that lets you keep track of what you're watching, what your friends are watching, and where you all left off. DC On Screen is a maladjusted production. Visit maladjusted.tv for more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, an improvised web series, vlogs, parodies, and more.
Are you-